Okay, welcome back. And it is Thanksgiving, and I want to give thanks on behalf, I'm sure, of a lot of you out there to welcome Erica back to the program. We're going to be doing two nights a week, probably, Wednesday and Friday, in our usual time slot. There's just a lot going on. She's been away dealing with some family issues. She has an older mom, and you know, a lot of families have that to deal with. And then she came down with something that we're going to talk about in some detail tonight. It is commonly called cellulitis, but there's much more to it than that. We're probably going to refer to it more appropriately as Group A strep. And for you sharp-eared listeners, you'll know that Group A strep is also known as the flesh-eating bacteria. Now, it may be that, or it may be a variant of that, we don't know. But these infections of Group A strep are surging, and it surged on our Erica. So, welcome back, young lady.
Thank you. Good to be back.
You're welcome. Yeah.
It was, it's been a rough couple of months.
Yes, it has. I know. Been there most every step of the way, and this is not a joke either. This it's another one of those things that didn't used to happen. Hell, I grew up my whole life and I never heard of cellulitis. I just didn't. I heard of Group A strep, and then it's also called necrotizing fasciitis. And if you get that kind of an infection, your fingers and your toes and your feet and legs, God knows what else, basically die. Group A strep. It's a flesh-eating bacteria because it shuts down the capillary flow of blood. And when that shuts down, the cells die. And then you start getting this black, dead tissue where your healthy fingers and toes and feet and legs used to be. And they start thinking about amputating. Now, you might say, well, how did she get it? Well, we don't know for sure. But we've got some guesses. And that's the best we can do right now. And she does monitor, as you know, many of the social media groups where, thank God, there is social media for these vax-injured people and others who are fighting terrible illness and have nobody to talk to. And the saddest of all are the people whose families have basically just dumped them after they got vax-injured, terribly vax-injured. They're tired of it, and they just walk away, basically. They don't want to deal with it anymore. So if we have to look at this on a cause and effect thing, there's nothing in particular we can point to say this is how it occurred. So you go ahead and tell the story to the best of your ability.
Well, that's true. I don't know exactly. I think maybe a few days prior to this really taking off, I had a knife wound in my thumb. I was doing some dishes in the sink, and the tip of the knife caught the tip of my thumb and punctured it. And I washed it out. You know, I was standing with running water, so I managed to wash it out pretty quickly right away. And it wasn't very deep, and I really didn't think anything of it. I think I might have put a Band-Aid on it and just went about my business.
Right. Right.
About 2 days later, I noticed the knuckle on that thumb was a little swollen. You know, I could still bend it, but it looked like there was just a bump on top of the knuckle. And it was a little bit tender, but it wasn't impeding my ability to bend it or use it. And again, I just, you know, just kept an eye on it, but didn't really think anything of it, went about my business. And then towards the end of the day, I had gone out for some exercise. It was hot that day, and when I was finishing up, I just suddenly felt ill, and it just came on fast. I felt like I had the flu or something, and I almost wanted to go and just dunk the hand in the water because I could feel something was happening with the hand, and I just wanted to dunk it in the water, maybe cool it off or something, but I couldn't get down to the beach because the rocks were all slippery, and I'd just go home, and by the time I got home, I had a chill. I said, well, I know it's 85 degrees out, but I'm going to take a sauna. So I did, and amazingly, it knocked out the fever, whatever that, you know, ill feeling was, and I was fine, or so I thought. Overnight, the hand swelled. And I thought, oh boy. Yeah, and I have had in the past, because of my work with animals and cats in particular, I've had cat bites that have very rapidly become infected and turned into cellulitis. And, you know, you just go down to the urgent care or the emergency room and tell them what happened, and they will prescribe an antibiotic. And depending on how far along the infection is, they might give you an IV to try to get ahead of it. And on every occasion in the past, that has worked like a charm. And I figured, well, probably the same thing this time. No. My mistake in thinking that it was going to be the same was that we were dealing with the same type of bacteria. With animal bites, cat bites in particular, the type of bacteria you're dealing with is usually Pasteurella, and it will respond very quickly to antibiotics.
Right.
Silly me, assumed that we were still dealing with Pasteurella when, in fact, we were dealing with Group A strep. So I went to the emergency room and explained what happened, and somehow or other, in relating the story, they somehow got it in their heads that I had taken a fall and assumed that the knuckle in my thumb was infected in some way, because there was no obvious wound at that point.
I don't know how you taught. When you told me that, I just couldn't believe it. That's
yeah,
just
the story got distorted. You know, they examine you. And I had a nick on my hand from something else, and I made the mistake of saying that, oh, I was stumbling and I put my hand against a rough rock so that I wouldn't fall. Somehow that got translated in, oh, she fell. So now they're thinking I have a fall and a damaged knuckle. So here we go with X-rays. And really, I just want some antibiotics, please. No, so we have to go through the X-ray, and my hand is so distorted now from the swelling that even just to move it slightly, just to touch it, is just hideous pain. And so they managed to get three images, and I said, that's enough. I cannot do any more. There's nothing wrong with my hand. The bones are fine. Well, no, we got to make sure, you know, there's bacteria that cause, you know, create gas, and we'd be able to see that on an X-ray. And then they kind of threw up their hands and said, well, we don't know what's causing this, and we want to admit you for a CT scan and steroids and IV antibiotics, and we're going to have to transfer you to another facility by ambulance. Oh, my God, you're joking. And I put my foot down, and I said, no, please just give me some antibiotics, and let's just see if it responds. I mean, this is really over the top. And so they really shamed me into being this negligent, and you know, to his credit, the physician did warn me that, you know, if this gets out of control, you're going to be looking at, you know, probably surgery to correct the damage. It will damage your hand. And I was reluctant to go down that road at that point. I mean, it just didn't seem that it warranted, you know, these extreme interventions just yet. In hindsight, though, I want to think that they are seeing quite a bit of strep A, this group A strep, that, yes, moves very, very quickly and will do quite a bit of damage if you don't stop it. You know, including
your hand, her hand swelled up like if you had put an air valve in it and blew it up like a balloon.
Yeah.
All the way to her wrist. And it started to go up her arm from her wrist.
It was on the move.
Oh,
it started
yes.
in the thumb,
yeah.
And then, you know, the next place I could feel it was down at the base of the thumb going towards the wrist, and then, you know, eventually the whole hand swelled up, and then it was moving up my arm. And boy, did it hurt. And I would have liked a IV. I would have consented to an IV drip. You know, I knew at that point, you know, we're not messing around. Let's try to get ahead of this thing. But
sure.
I don't know. That seemed to be part and parcel of consenting to a CT scan, admission to the hospital.
Well, putting yourself in their
steroids.
Hands is what you're doing. You're giving up your own dominance of your condition. You're letting them take over.
It sounded just over the top. I mean, come on. It's
right.
It's, But I, you know, nowadays I know these hospitals do practice what preventative. And I don't know if that's the right word, but you know, they want to cover their asses in terms of making sure that they're not overlooking something, that they're not being negligent. So anyway, but the story on that day was that I left with a 7-day prescription of antibiotics, and it was a cephalosporin, also known as Keflex. So I began taking them, and the downside of that particular antibiotic is that you have to take them 4 times a day, which means you're getting up in the middle of the night, which means your stomach is always not happy, so it makes eating difficult. So I took them for 7 days, and I didn't feel the type of relief that I did with antibiotics in the past when I had this type of cellulitis, and it's just, and I got to thinking, well, maybe it's the wrong antibiotic. Maybe it's not matching the organism that's causing this. So I had to make a judgment call at the end of 7 days. It was, my hand was still quite swollen, couldn't use it. You know, the pain had diminished to the point where I could at least move it without excruciating pain. And I didn't know, you know, do you stop the antibiotics and then hope that your immune system can, you know, deal with the rest of it, or you know, should you ask for more antibiotics? So I made the choice to go back and ask for more antibiotics, and this time I had to play the game and get admitted and have more x-rays. Thank God they had an orthopedic surgeon look at it and said, no, you don't have joint involvement, and there's no bone involvement, so, you know, you should be fine with the IV antibiotics. But that was 3 nights and 4 days in the hospital. And my hand, I will tell you, there is damage. The swelling has gone down, but my fingers, I still can't make a fist.
It doesn't look like the same hand. It doesn't.
No, it's at least it looks like a hand. Before, it was looking like a claw.
No, it did.
Like a lobster claw.
She's really understating a little bit the pain. She was in pain, a lot of pain. This is not a joke. I don't know if all people who get group A strep infections, cellulitis, if you will, have that much pain, but this is not a joke. This is a bad thing.
Well, here's the big difference between, you know, an ordinary Pasteurella bacteria and group A strep, and for that matter, you could throw staph in there too, and not necessarily methicillin-resistant staph, I mean any staph. Staphylococcus and streptococcus produce superantigens, and this is important because superantigens provoke your immune system into a cytokine storm, essentially. And I'm utterly convinced that much of the pain and the burning, I mean, my hand felt like it was on fire and being put into a blender or meat grinder at the same time. It was almost indescribable. And so what happens is you've got the bacteria that's doing damage, and this, the streptococcus is renowned for destroying red blood cells and then destroying your blood vessels. And then your own immune system, because the way that it's provoking it, your own immune system is also damaging your tissues.
Yeah, that's what it looked like. The hand began to show signs, and now you can see them, I think, more than ever, of tissue damage.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like the same hand. It's getting there, but it's been damaged. And she kept saying that it's inside my hand is being damaged. I can tell.
Yeah, at some point, I don't know how I knew, but I knew that, you know, the bacteria was gone. You know, that was not the problem anymore.
Right.
It was now I'm just dealing with damage, and that's why the swelling can persist long after the infection has been knocked down. Because there's damage.
Correct. No, so, and it's odd damage. It's not external damage that you can see. It's internal damage.
Yeah, thank God. It never progressed to necrotizing where, you know, you're actually, you know, the
It could have, though,
tissue.
And we were very worried about this, and thank God it didn't.
Well, and then the next step is it can go septic, meaning you're, you know, it gains access to your circulatory system, your bloodstream, and then you're really in trouble because group A strep, if you get, well, they call it toxic shock syndrome, and usually when you think of toxic shock syndrome, you're thinking of staphylococcus, but the toxic shock you get from streptococcus, group A strep, is fatal in about 50% of the cases, and it moves so fast. That's the problem. I mean, this thing just chews through tissues like nothing. And that is one of the bacteria that many countries now, these highly vaxxed countries, are having a problem with. There's a new strain of strep, group A strep, that's particularly virulent, that seems to be driving this, but I would argue that, well, you know, if you're having immune system issues, that's a problem too. So when I was dealing with this, the fallout from this, I decided to join a couple support groups for cellulitis, and they throw in sepsis and necrotizing fasciitis into the same basket. You would not believe some of the stories. You know, it makes my ordeal look like kids' play. I mean, a lot of these people, I mean, for the record, when cellulitis a lot of times will occur in the lower limbs, like your legs or your feet, particularly if you're overweight, sedentary, or you don't have good circulation. And that's what many of these people appear to be dealing with, just these cases of recurring cellulitis in the limbs. But there are other people that are having that in their hands and other parts of their body. Any place where there's restricted blood flow or lymph flow,
right? And that happens a lot with people. We have 60% of America now, which is either obese or overweight.
Or diabetic.
And that's even worse. So many of these group A strep infections, cellulitis, are occurring in the legs. Heavy legs, fat legs, that's what they have. And it's really terrible to see these things. The pictures are frightful. Well, your hand was frightful enough. That was enough.
Sometimes, you know, in my case, there was no abscess. There was nothing to lance or drain. But in many cases, you know, it will ulcerate, and then they have to drain it, and then the wound just doesn't heal.
Not in your case. No evidence of that at all. It went after your neurology in the hand, your musculature, I suspect.
The tendons. Tendons, ligaments,
all the
knuckles.
It's not a joke. And did it come from the little knife stick? That's the best guess. But it technically could have come from direct contact. So touching something. It's a long shot, but it's out there. Like a grocery shopping cart, for example. You put a bare hand on that.
Half the population is colonized with either staphylococcus, mostly staphylococcus. Half the population. Yes. That's a normal component of your skin microbiota.
It's on the
skin.
Your skin
microbiome.
That's right. That's right.
And then streptococcus, probably 15% of the population carries that. And they're not a problem, you know, when conditions are, I don't know, not stressful for them, you know, when they're not challenged. One of the theories is why do these bacteria suddenly become a problem for people? Well, you could argue that, well, their immune systems aren't right. Yeah, that's certainly a component of that. But the other theory, too, is that something in the bacteria's environment is stressing it to cause it to produce more either superantigens or these virulence factors. So the bacteria are changing their behavior and, well, making it difficult for the immune system to keep them at bay.
For sure. I think the most important aspect of this is Erica is not injected. Her immune system is excellent. Many of these people, 81% of America is injected. And they're not stopping getting these damn shots, by the way. They are still lining up and getting shots.
Yeah.
But this group A strep, or you can call it cellulitis, that's fine, is spreading. There are two or three groups. How many groups? Two groups? And you're getting a lot of new people coming into these groups complaining about this. And to top it all off, one story that Erica sent me last week, earlier this week, anyway, a four-year-old boy. Tell him that one. That's crazy.
Yeah, I think it was a girl, actually. 4 years old, posted some pictures of her child's lower leg and heel. You know, it was all swollen up, and, you know, there was an ulcer, too, I think. Oh, you didn't see the pictures, or did you? It was nasty looking. Not as bad as some, but, you know, you feel for a little kid that has this type of problem. And evidently this child has had three or four bouts of this. And, you know, nobody's asking how many shots. You know, this is not normal.
No. Nope. We've got a couple of stories that we can read that I think will be very illustrative of what's going on out there. And what's going on out there is not good. This is serious business. This can kill you in 24 hours or even less if you're really run down and you've been injected four or five times and your immune system is on its last legs, if it's on its legs at all. This stuff can just overwhelm you and run rampant through the body, and sepsis is a killer.
Well, yeah, they're saying that, what, Japan is having an epidemic of it?
Yes.
Canada, UK, yeah. Australia, and it's here in the U.S. too. But yeah, the strain is, what are they calling it, M1. M is the big protein on Streptococcus. M1 UK, because it was first discovered in the UK. So M1 UK is the strain that's causing the problems right now, or this particularly virulent form of strep. But, you know, if the symptoms of fever and I think low blood pressure come on really fast and, you know, you don't have an explanation for it, you want to make sure you're not dealing with group A strep or your toxic shock from group A strep. I can't tell you how fast this thing took off.
Oh, it was like a jet. Zoom.
If you don't have some kind of medical intervention, if it's gone septic, you know, you can be dead within 48 hours. It's that fast.
Yeah, I think it could even be with some of these immune compromised people even quicker than that. That's a possibility.
Well, the trend I'm seeing in some of these groups is that people will get cellulitis on their legs, and you know, you don't always have to have an obvious entry wound in the case of these strep infections, and that's the mystery about these things. Many people can't remember having a puncture wound or anything. Some people just got a bruise. You know, they banged their leg and suddenly hear cellulitis, and for whatever reason, it's getting infected.
Yep.
But then, you know, it's, with a lot of these people, it seems to go septic pretty fast.
And that's, I don't know how you even begin to, with someone who's immune suppressed, if they go septic, I don't know how you could, that's a bad sign just for openers that their immune system is not
well. What they're doing
functioning.
In some of these chronic cases is they'll put people on just low-level antibiotics permanently.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. We've got a couple of, we're going to call it group A strep as often as we do cellulitis, but I think there is a link in all likelihood to multi-vaxxed or people who have had the virus several times. Remember, and I'll repeat this, you do not want to get this virus. This is a synthetically constructed biological weapon engineered to do massive damage, fatal damage to the human body. You don't want this virus. It's not just like having a bad cold or the flu. That was a lie. That was a psyop to make people not take it seriously. You take it seriously. We don't want you to get this. And the first time you get it, and the second time is even worse, they say, after the first time. It's, for some reason, it hits you harder. That's something we've heard. Anyhow, go ahead.
Well, we've talked about the spike protein, and one of the destructive features of the spike protein is that it has a superantigen sequence in it, similar to these bacterial superantigens. And the significance of that is it exhausts your T cells. And so what happens is your T cells just get used up trying to neutralize this well, whatever, protein, antigen in this case, but it doesn't work. And because the spike protein just keeps persisting, you know, ideally you'd want antibodies.
So it
but
actually goes through your inventory of T cells.
Yes.
And generally depresses that, so you don't have that working
so
for
you. So you have T cell exhaustion, and that's a feature of COVID. There is T cell exhaustion, and definitely if you're vaxxed and you're just a chronic producer of spike protein, it will wipe out your T cells.
Now this is not good.
You know, and that's one reason, one of several reasons that, you know, there's this huge susceptibility to cancer after this virus or spike protein exposure.
Right. Let's read a couple of these, well, they're posts from the cellulitis group. You've got one, we've got four altogether, I guess.
I think we've got three.
Three here. Yeah, I think you have one more there.
Hmm.
Anyway. All right, the first one is from, I'm currently just recovering from the third. Okay, how about that one? Should we start with that one?
Sure, yeah.
All right. Hi, I am currently just now recovering from the third case of cellulitis in just 8 weeks. I was admitted for the second flare-up. I got out about 4 weeks ago from the hospital. This flare-up started on Thursday. Luckily, I caught it just as it started and began other antibiotics within the hour. I am on daily antibiotics, but what I'm struggling with is pain. It feels like I have 100 drawing pins stuck in my leg. It's been like this for weeks, and it's really affecting me. Does anyone have any idea? Is this muscle tissue damage going on? I have another medical condition called Klippel-Trenaunay. All right, we'll get Erica right back. It's funny how this happens, isn't it? They'd like to knock her off. She should be back. I have another medical condition, K.T. Weber syndrome, which is a vascular disorder. Thank you. And people responding say, it's likely the pins and needles feeling is caused from nerve damage from the infection. And as we mentioned with Erica, she's had neurological damage to the hand. So I'll repeat that. It's likely the pins and needles you're describing, that feeling, is caused from nerve damage from the infection. I know it did in my case. It has lessened a wee bit over time. It's been about 4 years since the last severe case of cellulitis that I've had. And someone adds into that, I'm just getting over my seventh since the 23rd of June. Seventh lot, he calls it, a lot, cellulitis, since June 23rd. But I also found out last week that I have MRSA, which has the same symptoms as cellulitis, and have been put on a high dose of antibiotics. It might be worth speaking to your doctor again. Just two suggestions to that first post. So this again, I grew up my whole life. I never heard of anybody with cellulitis. Just didn't happen. I always thought it was a condition of being fat. That's how, you know, I just didn't know about this group A thing. Now we know, and the groups are growing quickly. Comment on that or go right on to the next one.
I'm going to do the one I have here that you don't have.
Right.
This is a young woman. I'm guessing, I don't know, 30s, maybe 40. Hi, everyone. I'm a newbie to the group. Earlier this month, I had my second cellulitis infection. I previously had my first cellulitis infection in November 2023. This time around, it came on quicker. On October 1st, I had a doctor's appointment in the morning, got my flu shot, then went to work. During my shift, I started getting aches and chills. I contributed those to me just getting the flu shot in the morning. As the day went on, I started to become very fatigued, developed a high fever and body aches. I was completely out of it. My boyfriend picked me up from work and brought me to the hospital. That's when I noticed my left leg had a red spot that was warm to the touch. That quickly spread up my leg over a few hours. I was given IV antibiotics and fluids for my high fever and later admitted. I was in the hospital for 5 days. I was told the first time I got cellulitis, back in November 2023, that I had a higher chance of getting it again. They could not pinpoint what caused this both times. I'm wondering if there's some underlying condition they seem to be missing. They have already ruled out diabetes. I am 40. Besides high blood pressure, I'm generally healthy. And I would ask, how many shots?
And I was going to just say that. You'll notice there was no mention of the death vax, as what it is being called by many people. No mention of that. These social media groups, you're not allowed to mention that. Or you can't, you're going to get dinged.
There's still a lid on it. You know, it's better than it was, but you still really can't talk freely about these things. And some of it's just because certain people get offended. They don't want to hear that these shots were just plain poison.
No. Nobody wants to hear that. That's exactly correct. Wow. All right, well, there's one more here. I only have two. I don't know where I had three. I don't know where the third one went. It just vanished out of that little folder. Somebody's playing games with my computer right now. I'm telling you, I can't prove it, but things are disappearing. Literally. You sent me two email notes just at airtime. There's only one left. The McKernan one is gone.
Really?
Gone. It just vanished. I didn't delete anything. So it's crazy. So if you can resend me the McKernan one,
yeah.
I can pull that up. Hi, everyone. Back to Group A strep infections. Hi, everyone. I've been interested in reading everybody's stories. I first got cellulitis in my leg after I cut my toe in April of 2023. I didn't know what the heck was happening and ended up in the hospital for 2 weeks. I was going to add a picture, but they are very graphic, as I had toe-to-knee pus-filled oozing blisters and lumps of skin falling off. My second round of cellulitis was out of the blue 10 months later, February 24, which not only spread to my lower leg, but spread from my groin on down as well. Hospitalized for a week, cellulitis has changed my life forever. My foot and leg are still very, very swollen and red. By the end of the day, it feels burning and as if I'm dragging it around. I've only just been able to find shoes I can wear, extra wide and a size too big, after only being able to get Crocs, I don't know, it's a kind of a shoe, Crocs?
Yes, Crocs.
On for months and months. I must be out of the loop. I don't have any Crocs. All right. I've been advised to wear a compression sock every day and to elevate it. And if and when it happens again, the medics will consider putting me on a low-dose daily antibiotic. I found the whole thing to be a challenge, to say the least. Yes. And again, these are progressing in number rather quickly. How many groups are there now? Three? Two that you've seen?
Oh, I looked at two of them. But... I don't know. This would be a good question for Nurse Anne. You know, are you seeing a lot of this type of thing?
Yeah. She's back at work. She'll know. So we'll find out. If you have your folder, you do, with the readers in it, go get the third one. Because I don't have it. It's vanished.
I don't have a third one. We've read three.
Two. All right. Then that's it. Okay, maybe it didn't vanish. All right, there are a number of other things. We're way behind. We're going to get caught up. Give us a little time. And the Kevin McKernan thing is very interesting. This is something we've talked about for literally a couple years now, and it has to do with each Pfizer, at least Pfizer, I'm not sure about Moderna, but the Pfizer injections, these death bioweapons, were found to have up to 400 billion pieces of DNA in the fluid that is injected into people, in the so-called vax. 400 billion pieces of DNA. And people right away, and we talked about it here, we said, well, what's, how did they get there, first of all? Oh, and they tried to say it was a contaminant. BS. No contamination. That's in there intentionally. And what could it do? What could that, all of that 400 billion pieces, fragments of DNA, do in your body? And people began to worry about, the very few who even talked about it as a danger, about integration. Tell us what integration is and what we know now. And I said in the beginning, what's to stop it from integrating? And no one answered that. We talked about it. So go ahead.
Well, that having this DNA that's not supposed to be in the shots, it was only supposed to be messenger RNA, and they said it would degrade quickly and wouldn't be a concern.
Yeah. Right.
Well, they found an exceptionally high amount of the plasmid DNA. That was the template used to make the RNA, bacterial plasmids, in these shots. They didn't clean them up. Maybe that was intentional. But having DNA in there, especially linearized DNA, which means strands of it rather than the plasmids, which are circular, make it very easy to go into the cell and the nucleus and integrate into the person's DNA. And when that happens, you don't know where.
It's the desired form. That's what you'd want, linear, because it'll plug right in.
Right. And having that SV40 promoter, which was in the Pfizer vaccines, not Moderna. Moderna didn't have the SV40 promoter. But the SV40 in the Pfizer, that is a very strong nuclear localization signal. So it's going to drive that. It's going to make sure the DNA goes into the nucleus. And
guaranteed.
Where it inserts, that's the problem. You have no control over where it inserts, and if it's in the vicinity of an oncogene, meaning a gene that can promote cancer, well, here we go.
And the other side of that coin is, does the piece of linearized DNA have some kind of an instruction on where it's supposed to look for a place to join the gang? Integrate.
No. It's just random. Yeah.
Okay. I wouldn't put anything past these people.
You know, has anybody studied that? I mean, it seems, you know, when they chopped up the DNA, they did try to degrade them somewhat with these endonucleases, but, you know, I mean, just having them there is a problem. They're not supposed to be there. It's a huge risk for exactly what we just said, the integration and the formation of cancer.
Yeah.
And you know, the fact that these things traffic to the gonads, you know, the ovaries and the testes, makes future generations at risk. And if you've listened at all to the Pfizer papers, the Naomi Wolf's reports on that, it's almost like Pfizer was obsessed with getting these things into the reproductive organs. They weren't even looking at whether or not these vaccines, so-called vaccines, were effective at stopping infection or stopping transmission. They were interested in where these things distributed and what effects they had on the reproductive system.
We should also mention cancer, since Erica's been on leave, getting well. Cancer is now just raging everywhere. It's just all kinds of it. Pancreatic cancer seems to be one of the hallmark varieties that people are coming down with. Not a good kind of cancer to have at all. Glioblastomas, there are just a lot of cancer. Cancer seems to be running rampant through the human species now, especially the vaxxed. And we should include the virus survivor segment of society, which is the great majority. 80% injected here in this country, and how many more of those 20% have had the virus? We don't know. So anyhow, cancer is not a good thing at all, because nothing seems to be helpful. Now that said, let me go back to the fenbendazole and ivermectin data that I've been publishing that regularly, and there does seem to be some extraordinary positive response when people are using fenbendazole and ivermectin, even in tandem with chemotherapy, etc. But by itself, there are third and fourth stage cancers literally being turned away at the door right before the undertaker is ready to walk into the house. And these people are getting 100% better, far as we can tell. And that's extraordinary. So think about that.
Yeah, William Mackis continues to publish these really remarkable success stories of these late-stage cancers being reversed using either ivermectin and fenbendazole.
Yeah.
It's extraordinary. And Dr. Paul Marek just wrote a book about repurposed drugs for cancer, and Amazon refuses to sell it. So that's probably one you want to get.
Interesting. Okay. This Kevin McKernan will not load up in one of my windows. I don't know why. I keep pulling up window after window, but it won't load up.
Let me send you a file.
Yeah, that'd be helpful. So, in other words, everything we had been reporting on for close to 4 years has not abated. It's getting worse. And tragically, people who have been injected with this horror that was built by and large by apparently Ralph Baric and others of that ilk, but he seems to be number one, at least in terms of notoriety. These things are absolutely devastating to the human body. I have no idea how many people tomorrow will be seated at a Thanksgiving table with an empty chair, as sad as that sounds, lots of people, or an empty chair because someone is too sick and disabled from the injection to get up and to join in at dinner. So for all of you out there, know that we really care, and this is a really very terrible thing. The holiday season is here, and I just wish to hell we had some breakthrough extraordinary news. Other than the ivermectin and fenbendazole for cancer, I can't think of anything really positive. That's plenty. I'll take it. But this is not getting better. And that was one of the first questions I rhetorically even asked when we were beginning to do these programs. Is anybody getting over, they call it long COVID, vax damage, whatever, and recovering to every bit the good, healthy, vital person they were before? The answer is no. No one. People who are doing well still say they haven't been the same since they took the shots. They just aren't the same. So there we go. Okay. Now, you sent me the little image, and when I click on that, it usually opens up the McKernan thing, but that is either being blocked.
Well, I just
sent
you an actual file.
Okay, let me, that's good. That should work. Here it is. All right, I got it. All right, let's set this up, and I got it. I'm ready to go. Tell us about Kevin McKernan, and this is about the integration aspect that we've been discussing of the
DNA. So Kevin McKernan, he's the one who discovered. He's a geneticist. He works. He's got his own company. Was it Medicinal Genomics, where he sequences cannabis plants for medicinal purposes. So he discovered the DNA contamination, and he did an interview recently with this Danny Jones on YouTube, and unfortunately the YouTube video is now gone. It's been scrubbed, but fortunately people have mirrored it on other platforms. And it was quite a long interview, well over 2 hours, maybe three, but it's a really good interview, and he just talks about everything that's wrong with these vaccines.
All right. This is about a minute and 50-second clip with Dr. Kevin McKernan. Here we go.
Communication they gave to Joe was not very reassuring to Joe, because they started saying there's no SV40 protein in there. And like we never said there's protein. We said there's a piece of DNA, pieces of DNA in there that are worrisome that they can integrate, and you haven't done any genotoxicity studies. Typically, when you have something like this, you've got to measure what's the insertional mutagenesis rate. Mm-hmm. And these vaccines got a hall pass because they were deemed mRNA. They're like, look, it's not DNA, so we don't need to do that, right? But what they didn't tell you is that, yes, it's mRNA, but there's also DNA there, in which case, if they were honest about how much DNA was there, they would have been forced to go through a genotoxicity study, and they would have had to look for insertional mutagenesis rates.
Okay, let's restate what he just said. Can you do that?
Yeah,
I think I can play it over again.
I don't know if you've got that on 1.5 speed. It seems really fast.
I'll check it.
So anyway, he's talking about how when the manufacturers of the FDA was alerted to this discovery of the DNA, that you know, they held their feet to the fire and said, you were supposed to do insertional mutagenesis studies, meaning to see whether or not there was any integration of the DNA into cells that were exposed to this, and you know, they didn't.
Funniest thing.
And they're trying, okay, the FDA is trying to say that it's of no consequence. There's a little bit of DNA in there. It's not a problem. Well, it is a problem.
Big. And remember, each injection can have up to 400 billion pieces of apparently predominantly linearized DNA, which makes it very simple for it to integrate. We just waited for the data. Now we have it. It's true. And these things can cause all kinds of havoc. And as Erica said earlier, if they mess up with, get next to an oncogene, that could kick cancer right into motion, potentially.
Yep.
All right, this does not have a little selector for speeds on the screen I've got, so
okay.
We'll have to just carry on. All right. He does speak rather quickly anyhow, so.
I think someone probably had it on fast when they recorded it.
Yeah. All right, here we go.
That didn't occur on the mRNA vaccines. So that's part of the crux of the issue at hand. And so now we're in the stage where we're scanning through tumors to look for integration events and looking for evidence of this in cancer biopsies. And
okay, they're looking at tumors to see if they can find evidence of integrated foreign DNA that comes through the injections.
In them now.
Yeah, weren't you just in Germany doing this?
I'm working with a group in Germany. I was just presenting in Phoenix at a CHD conference down there. But this is what's been most concerning is in this most recent work, we were basically scanning tumors that had spike signals. So there's an immunohistochemistry you can run that's like an antibody that looks for the spike protein on tissue. So the folks out there were scanning all the biopsies to see which ones had high spike. They found one that had really high spike, sent it to us for sequencing. And we can find components of Pfizer's vaccines inside this thing a year after vaccination. And what's even more...
Inside the cancer tumor.
It's in the tumor. So it's expressing spike. The plasmids are still there. They're at about 100 copies per cell. They shouldn't be there a year later. They shouldn't be there at all. Bandwidth.
100 pieces, copies, of foreign DNA have been added to your genome in this case.
Well, he said that the plasmids, that's the circular DNA.
That's not
that was
the
supposed to be the template. That,
right.
Yeah, we're just talking about the plasmids now that are 100 copies per cell in these tumors that they've looked at.
Unreal. Thank you, Big Al Bourla and Pfizer.
No kidding.
What a contribution. Here's the rest of it.
That they're a year later is remarkable. And the fact that they're at 100 copies per cell is even more astounding. That tells us that these things aren't going in and getting degraded, they're going in and they're replicating.
Okay, there you go. They're going in, joining up with your genetic family and replicating. This is insane. I still think that up to 400 billion pieces of DNA, plasmids or linearized, there's no accident. That's not contamination.
It's much too convenient.
Doing. Oh,
much
absolutely.
Too
yeah. All right. We have much to go over. We'll do that on Friday In the meantime, I want to speak for both of us. And Erica, you go ahead first. It's Thanksgiving tomorrow.
Oh, well, yeah, we're thankful for another year without war, without famine, I guess.
Let's hope.
Let's hope. Count your blessings.
So each day is a blessing. Don't forget that. And enjoy your day tomorrow. And enjoy your family. If you have differences, forget them. Not tomorrow. No. Happy. Every day is a blessing. Thank you very much for being here. Welcome back, pal.
Okay, thank you. Good to be back.
Okay.
All right.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.
And we will be back in just a few minutes. Hang on. And again, I'm going to do a rerun next hour, a good one. But have a wonderful day tomorrow and enjoy.